This is Jan Cox, talk number 2259, recorded on November 4th, 1998.
Although she's always been witty and insightful, I couldn't resist mentioning I just got a new batch of communiques from Jane Blackstone, still over in Amsterdam. And her letters are just so striking sometimes. And I was thinking, once she gets out of the country, you know, is there some power in being in a new place? I ask you rhetorically. Of course, turn it internally where it belongs, and all of you should know anyway, there's always power in finding a new place, which coincidentally ties into the general theme of tonight's news items taken in toto. Not in the Lone Ranger, but in toto. So, here is the news. A man with a terminal illness was asked, "How does it feel to know that you're dying?" And he replied, "That's not what you're really asking. What you actually want to know is, what do I think about the fact that I'm dying?" There is a great degree of difference between the two. And to not realize this is to yourself be dying with each and every thought that flags your attention. The aim of all mystical effort is to become calm-headed, and the efficient approach thereto is to keep your attention on feeling, not thought. When one man heard that a certain occult teacher claimed to be the reincarnation of some previous world-famous figure, he said to himself, "Hell, he missed the point. Everybody's the reincarnation of everybody else. On what other planet does he imagine that humans are grown?" I guess that was some farming news at the end. And one man chided a certain public mystic with the accusation, "You don't take the struggle to awaken seriously enough." To which the accused responded, "Ah, but I do. I, in fact, take it much more seriously than you ever can. It's just that I know the parts that are serious from those that are not." And the castigator considered this for a moment, then said, "But in your utterances on the matter, I scarcely hear any words that would point to areas of seriousness." To which, in response to which, the mystic shrugged his shoulders in the, "Well, I guess that about says it all" manner. You think about it. Question: if a mirror could see itself, what would it see? Or what would it see? Another note regarding what I mean by feeling and what ordinary men mean by emotions. Feeling is seamless, while emotions are spasmodic. One is endless, while the other continually comes and goes. A boy asked his father, "Are horse races fixed?" And the elder replied, "Well, that's like asking if the struggle to awaken is fixed." And the lad instantly felt either enlightened or chastised. And upon realizing the boy's confused reaction, his father added, "Don't forget about the land of the clear-headed, wherein the word should appears in none of their dictionaries." And even though the lad had heard this story from the old man before, this time he was newly struck by the fact that, in a place of the truly enlightened, there would be no dictionaries anyway. And suddenly, this realization brought to his mind a somewhat humorous picture of perhaps such a land's single tome, which in his mind's eye he could see with the grand total title, "To Complete the Thesaurus of Nothing," which, of course, would cover everything. You can look up toward thought, or you can look down toward feeling. But no matter where you look, there it is. The comprehensive is of everything and nothing. The combination that is the only comprehensive reflection of things as they actually are. That is the combination of nothing and everything. And oh yeah, here's something you should find interesting concerning the search for answers to your questions. Feeling has no questions. Now, knowing that, what do you got to say about your God Almighty serious and continually frustrating search for all those God Almighty important answers? You can look to thought, or you can look to feeling. But if you go with the former, don't come whining to me about your bamboozlement. Go complain to thought. Ha! As though that would do any good. Ha! The basis for the claim that somehow, somewhere, deep down inside us, men actually know what they're doing and what life is really all about is that such is the fact with feeling. Only trouble is, no one plainly and directly, that is, sans any comment, no one plainly and directly gives their total attention to feeling. And the situation is not made any simpler by the fact that it is through thought and talk that men must be made aware of this approach, once they become conscious in the required routine manner. The struggle to achieve the calm-headedness of enlightenment is the epitome of wartime fifth column activity, in that success in overcoming, as it were, the mind and liberating yourself therefrom necessitates that the mind in part play traitor and help contribute to its own defeat. And you might note, such an outcome is a win-win affair inasmuch as you gain what you sought while the mind loses nothing in the process. Well, of course, except its hold on you, but I didn't bother to even add that. Once a person knows from their own experience what it is to be in that special state, be it called awakening, enlightenment, or whatnot, then they will seek out, develop, and use whatever immediately expedient method possible to hinder their continued looking back to and listening to thought. Such people will do and try anything, and will also quickly realize how ephemeral seems the potency of any method, and soon after that falls upon their the realization of why all sometimes useful methods to promote awakening are a sometimes thing. And that's right. It's because they're all illusions to begin with. Fact, you can ask and expect a lot of things from illusions, but permanency is not one of them. If you want anything even remotely resembling that, you're going to have to look to feeling. And now for some leisure time news. You can relax with feeling, but never with thought. And upon hearing this, the lad asked his dad, "Is that literally true?" "No," replied his father, "only comparatively true, which is the only kind of real truth there is." "Ha, and I'll bet you would have never thought of that." Get it? Thought of that. Thought of that. Get it? Get it? Huh? Huh? One day a man asked a mystic who sometimes spoke openly on his interest, "Why do you describe the state of success in your endeavor as that of being clear-headed, when it seems to me you could just as aptly call it being empty-headed?" And the mystic had to agree that such a term would be equally appropriate, but asked the man if it would not be even more disagreeable to ordinary ears than the one he presently employed. And after pondering the question but briefly, it was the man's turn to agree. fact. Only those with a head filled with nothing will see as nonsensical the struggle to achieve empty-headedness. You want me to repeat that? No, I won't. Fact. Only those who've reached the level of not knowing know. Meet again. Yet another way to ponder the natural superiority of feeling over thought is thus. Feeling, comparably speaking, is fed more directly by hormones than is thought. Thus does it offer a more direct perception of reality than the second-handedly fed neurons of thought. P.S. What if the distinction between what I mean by feeling and what you think of as thought is still unclear? Do this. Absolutely refuse to think about it, and it will not remain unclear. That is the distinction. It can't. Feelings can't be unclear. And if you turn your attention away from thought, feeling is all that's left. Say, want to play some dress-up paper dolls? Okay, it goes like this. If man is thought, then life is feeling. In fact, since we're out here in the garage alone with not a nosy adult in sight, want to go ahead and stage a full play production of Doctor and Nurse? All righty. Make a list of every single non-physical thing you don't like about yourself and life, and given two columns marked thought and feeling, everything you listed will fall in the first column. Think about it. Nothing, absolutely nothing that you dislike about life and yourself is based in feeling. No one feels any resentment against themselves or criticism about life. All such matters reside entirely in the column marked thought. Does anyone see the simple solution to all mortal complaints? Is anyone even interested in the cessation of dissatisfaction? Even had you no access to mystical books or teachers of enlightenment, you still have within you at all times a quiet, never confused place. Deep within, compared to the surface reality of thought, a place deep within, a place that is motionless and not affected by outside activity, a place that is speechless and listens not to the speech of anyone, a place in which you never fail to feel welcome, safe, and at peace. It is a place that, all in all, could not be more different than that area in your brain that so rambunctiously claims to see, analyze, and understand for you. Don't listen to thought. Keep your inner attention turned only to that other place. There is the true land of enlightenment. Not Tibet, not India, not Japan, not even Los Angeles. But that other place. That's what struck me as being connected with offhand observation about the, not say insight and quality, intensity of Jane's communiques always rises above her normally high level when she gets over in Europe or Russia or somewhere and writes. She's in another place. Since that term just came to me this afternoon, so to speak, it would be, if you can see it a certain way, it would be, with sufficient experience on your individual part, it would be a most adequate description, condensation of all the known approaches of the methods to try and achieve that other state is to internally go to that other place. And then leave yourself with the question about, well, what other place? That's it. Don't you get it? Even a few days ago when I started using a new division of feeling and thought. And in a sense, I blasphemed my own temporary description by giving any definition, any defining distinction between the two. Because even in advance, I said, well, there's really no word or not much of a way to try and describe what I mean by feeling. I did point out it's not emotion, and tonight I even wrote you a news item that you can, it's tied to almost everything else that I wrote, whether it seemed that way or not tonight, of that special state of what I mean by feeling, as opposed to emotion, even though, as we know, people use the word synonymously to say, well, I feel upset, or I feel as though I've been abused, I feel as though I've been mistreated, etc. Feeling, what I mean by it, and there is no good definition, or if there is, I'm not going to tell you. If I could describe it better, I don't want to. I'm trying not to even say what I'm saying now, but I'm obviously failing because I just said at least that. I'm trying, you know, to nudge you a certain way without saying much. But I do not mean emotion. And I gave you, as I said, one specific difference between it is that feeling is motionless. Feeling is seamless. And by feeling now, I can use my new term of, that's the other place. If you ask your mind now, if you ask your awareness, any of you, especially after listening to me, but you could have listened to almost any kind of mystical system or philosophy or theoretical approach throughout history, and you would still end up with that same generalized feeling. Sometimes it's blamed on Western philosophy, on Kant, the whole idea of the dichotomy of artificially dividing man up into mind and body. Well, they don't need to blame Kant. What a cheap shot. Men were doing that well, off on their own, long before Kant was even a gleam in his father's sperm. Once you are sufficiently and routinely conscious in the brain, in the verbal part of the brain, and your head is now a receptacle of what is ordinarily thought of as thought, ideas, and etc., the dichotomy is in place. It is not something developed. It is not the fault of Western thought, Western philosophy, Western views. The Chinese were doing it. They've got written history as far back further than Western literature, supposedly. But as far back, equally as far back, it's still there. All you've got to do is have a mind operating in a routine manner, and you've got your dichotomy. You don't have to call pizza delivery. You don't have to wait for the mail. You don't have to read philosophy. It's there. I mean, you can see that by now. You can feel that. You must have an awareness of that. As long as you're heeding what's going on in your head, there is the dichotomy. Because what's going on in your head, commonly known as the mind, feels separate, thinks itself separate, believes itself separate. Any other word you want, to it, it is a fait accompli. It is an undeniable fact that it, in some meaningful way, is separate, stands apart, is in some way divided from the rest of the human organism. The mind is the supreme egomaniac, if you want to look at it that way. Yeah, that was a cheap shot because it can't even conceive of it being egomania. The mind cannot conceive, even if it tries. You can do it yourself. I've written a gross of little stories about guys and their mind, remember, looking in the mirror and people talking to their mind. You try and get your mind, even those of you with the most scientific inclinations and training, you try and get the mind to say to the mind, I heard this idea that the mind is the supreme egomaniac in sort of an objective sense, and that it automatically, irrepressibly feels itself to be distinct from all other aspects of my organism, of my being. And the mind will say, well, let me think about that. And it will think about it and go, well, I don't know how you could say otherwise. And it can begin to, as fast as your brain will fire off, come up with examples. It can just trip off your tongue about all the ways in which the mind is, without any doubt, singular. All the things the mind can do that the body can't do, that no part of the body can do, no part of the collective body of man can do, that the mind is without any doubt singular. And you cannot mentally, you cannot, I cannot, no one can mentally, in an acceptable way to the mind, naysay that. There is no debate. You can in no wise prove to an ordinary mind, including your own, that the mind is not distinct. It can't be done. But there you are again. Don't you get it? If I'm correct that the mind is not distinct, that the mind is not a discrete, is not a separate part in any way from the rest of the organism, and you tell the mind that, and you ask your own mind, and assume that you have that kind of inclination or the ability to momentarily take that position, of let's be scientific, can you objectively try and consider that idea? Is it possible that you are not, that my mind, the mind of me and everyone else, but my mind's the only thing I can speak of for in positive terms, absolute terms, is it possible that my mind is not in some way, in any way, distinct, singular from the rest of my body, from my lungs, my breathing, my blood flow? And no matter how you think about it, no matter how you ponder and analyze it, the answer is always, no, it's not possible. But don't you get it? Who said that? Which doesn't prove a point, but that's just, don't you get it? That's when the bottom of the mind falls out, when you can see that for yourself. But you're left with the fact that there is no way in your mind, so don't feel bad, there's no one's mind can conceive of, can see the fact that it is not a discrete entity, that it is not separate from the rest of your organism, or it's not in any way distinct from the totality of life. But to tell the mind, well, you're the same thing as an eggplant. I mean, there's no great difference. It's just a different formation of atoms, molecules. You're no different than a star. You're no different than my big toe. And the mind taking its best shot has no shot at that. You should be able to see it. It has no possibility of seeing that. If it did, it would intrigue, be a mystical quisling. It would be engaged in what I said was the kind of necessary, ultimate fifth column work, in a sense. Everyone knows what fifth column is. The traitor's activity done within a locale under attack. You must know the term. It's when you have traitors in the midst, that somebody was attacking in World War II, I think, or one of the recent unpleasantness in Europe, that one guy was attacking one city, and which they thought to be impregnable based upon the amount of troops he had, which amounted to four columns. But it turned out that he had sympathizers in the city under siege that he was about to attack, of such numbers and such passion that he said that he didn't have four columns, that he had five columns. That is, one of them inside the city, that as soon as we give the sign to attack, they will begin to attack their own citizens from within. And it became synonymous with serious traitorous activity. Not just one guy trying to betray his country, but serious, meaningful. Perhaps the deciding factor was in the traitorous activity of the people under siege. Now, I'm telling you that if you see how to use the mind, such as turning your attention away from it, doing anything you can do, I'm just giving you one of my temporary ones of turning your attention below the level of consciousness, to use that kind of comparable two- and three-dimensional picturizations, is not even turn it up toward thought, but to turn it down. But do whatever you can. And one of the ways to use the mind is to make it turn on itself. And you're making it It may seem frustrating. May. Okay. It can feel frustrating to try and turn the mind on itself and realize, well, I'm getting nowhere. And I know you feel, well, I assume you do. It would be natural. I can't believe that you haven't at some time in the past, if not presently, feel as though perhaps you're missing the point. If I every night, so the main thing is that you've got to turn the mind on the mind. You have got to see what the mind is, and you can only see what the mind is by using the mind. And even if I tell you, it's fruitless. But you've got to see it's fruitless, and then the mind has seen the mind. I could say that every night, and there have been schools based upon nothing but that idea. And I can't believe that anyone could get through that, pursue that, and not feel for many years, maybe a lifetime or more, absolute frustration. If you took it to heart and you were convinced that the person who said it knew what they were saying and you attempted to pursue it, there are no gray areas. There's either complete success or, I suggest, frustration. I don't know how you look at it, but I'm saying that kind of frustration you should not mistake as being a failing on your part, that you have missed the point, that there's some trick to it that you hadn't found. I'll save you the effort. I went through that enough for all of you. That there's something in there I'm missing. Of course, now I've explained it to everyone's satisfaction if you've been listening. If you awake, if you become the perfection of enlightenment, and in your final several seconds on your deathbed, if you slip back in the mind, you're still going to feel like, there's one thing I didn't get. When you dumb MF, 2 seconds before that, you knew everything, and you slip back in the mind. Well, I mean, if you're dying, what the hell? You know, who am I to say that you wouldn't weaken there in your final moment? If you slip back in the mind, when a few seconds before that you were radiating the great cosmic aura of awakening, total enlightenment, and then just you're trying to get your final breath, you slip back into the mind, your final thoughts will be, God, I almost had it. You did have it. And so you went back to that, and the point is, you always feel as though I'm missing something. No, you're not. Well, there are two ways to look at it. No, you're not, or yes, you are. Take your choice. At least trying to awaken is a fair employment opportunity, or perhaps a fair, an equal irritant employer or endeavor. But if I say, well, only the mind can see the mind, and then I point out, well, you can't really do it, but you can try. And you go, well, I feel like I either can do it or I can't. Well, there you go. I mean, what could be fairer than that? And of course, that's just frustrating to the mind. But back to what I was saying in general. So I was trying to point out to you another way of approaching this. I know what I mean by feeling. And I either can't describe it any better or I won't. And I'm telling you that up front. For a very good reason. And it's no big kind of secret or anything. I'm not trying to entice you and make you wish that you knew, you know, that what my great secret or that secret is. It's not really a secret. All you got to do is turn your attention away from thought. Don't try to stop thought. I don't know a simple way to put it. Let's say that you're out for your morning walk or jog or whatever, and there you are, and suddenly the mind is bouncing around like a golf ball, you know, in a steam room. And it's going from one thing to another, and you simply realize it. If you can reach the point now that all of you should be somewhere close or be able to do it sometimes, that you're suddenly aware of it with no whining to yourself, with no censure to yourself, that in itself takes you close to feeling. That is, you're unemotional about the fact that here it is, I'm back looking at it. And again, I'll take some responsibility. I don't know how it could have been otherwise, but you could have been influenced by me if you don't blame me for all this time of me pounding and, you know, down the mind and all these stories I write and all these jokes I can make and the sarcastic observations I can make about, boy, yeah, listen to mine. Boy, there I go again. Jesus, you know, back on that train. Back being carried away. That has a limited use. I don't know how to avoid it to begin with, but I am now trying to treat all of you as though you surely have moments free of that, that you're simply aware that there I am back in the thorns, back in the snares of staring, that my attention that part of my brain that I call being conscious, that can think, that can talk, that it is back staring at this movie showing in my head. It's just, it is truly a surrealistic or a Dadaist montage. It's one of these things that New Yorkers tried to do back in the early beatnik days when they were experimenting with film. Is they'd take films that either they'd made or they took from somebody's home library, and they would just cut up, I don't know what, you know, 10 or 15 frames, like 2 or 3 seconds worth of movie, and they would paste it onto something totally unrelated. So that you were constantly looking at, one guy stood up and started to walk across the room, and there's a kid playing in the yard, and then there's an airplane flying overhead. And you finally realize, at first you might have thought, they wanted you to think, I guess, knowing artists, that it had some metaphorical message, that if you kept looking at it, and it finally just struck you, this is going to be an hour, or as long as you'd put up with it, then we'll sit here, and it's just 10 or 15 seconds of a strip of film, and it has nothing to do with what preceded it or comes afterwards. That is what you should notice is going on in your mind. Unless you're abnormal, or unless you're so awake that I don't know how you're still listening to me. You know, the only thing I know for sure, for absolute sure, is what goes on in my head. But then I have other secret ways, which all of you can find for yourself, of realizing that this is fairly normal. That this is about the extent and the scope of everyone else's head. I always thought I was exceptional, but when it comes down to what's going in my head, by God, I'm John Q. Public. I'm Joe Average. At any rate, so there you are, let's say, walking along, nice and quiet, no one's talking to you, you're not hurting anywhere, nothing's going on, you've got plenty of time before you have to go to work, and let's just say you're out for a morning walk. Nice, warm day, everything just right, and you're walking along, and you become aware that there it is, the ping pong ball is just bouncing around from one thing to another. It's just this film that's going on, it's just clips of one thing, and of course in your head, if you notice, I really exaggerated, they seem to be related. That one thing seems to jog something else. But at any rate, they're just one little snippet, this and then that and then this and then that and then this. But rather than looking at it, rather than now having a feeling, an awareness that is critical in nature, you know, damn me, and there it is again. Listen, grow up. There it always is. So there it is, but the thing is, your attention was given over totally to it. All right, what news? I mean, what's there to be excited about? What's there to be reasonably upset about? Because if you are still upset about it, you're being unreasonable. To look around and be surprised like, oh my God, I'm asleep again. Grow up! But I know the feeling, and again, I don't you, I'm not making fun of you because I don't know how you could have not gone through that. I mean, you have to, there has to be that feeling, as I pointed out. You have got to believe, you've got to believe that your current position, your current situation, the way in which you currently live, think, act, feel, everything is improper. That is, you're asleep or in the dark or in captivity, whatever term you first run across or that you like now, and that you have got to go from Paris to Istanbul. You've got to get from here to there. You've got to get from this condition to this other condition. Being awake, being liberated, being enlightened. And so you feel naturally. There's no way out until you begin to see it more clearly. There's no way out of feeling contemptuous of your current condition. And so the only reason it's funny, the only reason that you laugh, is I'm assuming I'm hearing the laugh of recognition. That, yeah, it's natural. You feel like, well, down there I am again. Well, you should be, and if you're not, I'm telling you, you should be past the point at least some of the time. And it should increasingly become more of the time that your awareness of it doesn't carry the damn. It should be lacking, when it's operating most efficiently, lacking any emotion. Because you can't be surprised, and you surely, well, at least if you listen to me, if you are not familiar enough with your mind to realize that your mind is about everyone else's mind, At least I assure you that there is no reason to feel unduly put upon. There's no profitable basis for feeling accusatory to this condition. It is natural, is the point. Once you became conscious, once you began to talk, once you had the ability to speak, then your brain was in that condition, that part of your brain that can speak, which is the only thing we're dealing with here, at least in the talk. Once you were there, it's natural. You're wasting your time to complain about it. And you're misreading it by now to think of it as being an aberration of some kind. It's natural, there it is, and you can no longer be surprised. I don't know how, by now, you can actually go along with me doing things like, well, damn, there I'm asleep again. That conveys some surprise, like, well, I'm shocked. You know, when I made the decision I wouldn't do it, and damn, I slept up and forgot to do it. Grow up. You know, how many times can you do that? If you're my kind of mystic, surely you have done it in excess of, surely me, it's got to be in the millions of times or you're not my kind of mystic. But my God, you know, a couple of million times of doing that, you know, doesn't it become a bit unseemly? I mean, aren't you just sort of secretly embarrassed? I'm trying to make you so, at any rate. So what I'm trying to describe about the distinction between feeling and thought is you're aware of it, that there I am, my attention was held. My mind was totally involved with what was passing through my mind. And so there you are, let's call it free from it for that moment, for those several moments, that right then, with doing nothing else, just being aware of it, you have stopped giving it your attention. Let's forget the matter of whether it has stopped, because I'm telling you that's not even important, ultimately. But your attention is off of it. But your attention is constantly off of your heart beating. It's off of your lungs breathing. That doesn't matter. They don't need your attention on them. You only turn your attention on them if there is a problem. What's going through your head cannot be considered a problem. I'm telling you, it's natural. So your attention is turned away from it there as you're walking along and you're aware of it. Then where is it? As opposed to you suddenly falling into a permanent full state of enlightenment, absolute, irreversible clear-headedness, we must look at as being a transitional state, a temporary state of some kind. You know, if you can do better, which I hope, which everyone can do better. I don't just hope, but I trust you will persevere because you can do better. It's not that far away. But at least at that moment, those moments, you simply become aware of it, and you're still walking along. The life is still just like it was. Nothing in the universe has changed, not one iota. God hadn't noticed what you've done. Life hasn't noticed. But for that few seconds right there, those moments, you have absolutely changed. You have done something abnormal. You have done something that is not natural in the scheme of the way things are set up. You have turned your attention away from thought, which under natural conditions, your attention or your consciousness consists of nothing but thought. Now, you know that by now. Your consciousness of you being a separate you, of you having an I, is based and composed entirely of thought. You have no feeling of I. That's why it is so delicate. That is why people are, if you want to look at it right quick this way, it doesn't prove anything, but just to point out to you, that is why people's mental health is considered so delicate. Professionally speaking and from ordinary views, that a man's mental health, and by the way, notice this again, the more you're in the civilized world, the more mental health is considered to be a most delicate matter. If you're over in the outback of Australia, if you still find a place where there are people that are fairly uncivilized, you hear very little talk, if I may overstate it, very little talk or concern over people's mental health. In fact, I would suggest if you could get them to understand what you meant, they would find it laughable. That they're out there every morning looking for lizards and bugs to eat, and you're talking about all the trials, the great tribulations of living in New York or Paris, holding down two jobs, having a portfolio of stocks that roller coaster, and you're worried constantly about your position in the social structure, and they keep staring at you, and you go, well, it's the delicacy of a man's mental health. And if you could make them understand what you meant, I'm sure that would be the biggest laugh they had of the year. They'd probably set up a new festival. Every year of that date that you said that and they knew what you were trying to say, that would be their annual day of extreme and huge laughter. At any rate, you do know that the more civilized, which we all fit, all of you fit that category, being civilized, well-read, educated, sophisticated, and the more so that you are in your mind, the more your mental health seems to be, your mental health seems to be of more delicacy than the rest of your health. That nowadays it is easier to get mentally sick, ill to the point of being disabled, and them not having a ready cure than it probably is to get some forms of cancer or tumors, things they can cut out, things they can give you medicine. Your mental health, I mean, it's just treated. Of course, this is by the mind. Please notice this. The rest of your body takes no notice of it, unless it has to suffer indirectly. But your body, that is the feeling, has no sense of mental health. The entire organism is either healthy and functioning or it's not. But it doesn't, mental health is not separate from, or mental dishealth, mental illness is not separate from heart failure, lung cancer. The body is either functioning or it's not, you know, in a full, healthy manner, it's not. But two people, two civilized men, read to their minds, mental health is considered an extremely delicate, and does everybody get why I keep saying delicate, a thing so tricky, a thing so kind of vaporous, uncertain, is to the point that if it begins to malfunction, there's very little, apparently, that even medical science, that our best minds can do about it. It is, so delicate, so fragile, so hard to comprehend. Ah, yes. I'm glad I took time out of our busy schedule to bring all this to your attention. It is delicate on the basis that it is not permanent, that it is a ping pong ball bouncing around, it is something of no substance. Therefore, when it apparently breaks down, it apparently can't be fixed. But as I pointed out, the mind is an illusion. But the more civilized you are, then there's this fact. You can ask for and you can expect many things from illusions, but there's one thing you can't expect, and that's permanency. When you keep looking to thought, there is no permanency. It seems as though, well, I'm a little awake now, and now I'm not. And now I caught myself, and now I'm not. Sometimes I feel encouraged about this whole affair. Sometimes I feel encouraged about being alive. And other times I feel disappointed. No, you don't. No, you don't. I know what you mean, but you're misspeaking. That was the opening news item. A man with a terminal illness was asked, how does it feel to know that you're dying? And he replied, that's not what you're really asking. What you actually want to know is, what do I think about the fact that I'm dying? Because that's all you can ask. That's the only thing that is possible. Nobody can feel. Do you understand? I thought maybe it was too hard to put in front or too harsh to start with, but there is the best example that came to my mind of the distinction. Because it would be natural if you knew somebody that they'd been diagnosed as, you know, they're dying, no doubt about it. It would be natural for you or anyone else. You would say, perhaps you were that close to them, but anyway, it would be not unexpected for someone to say, geez, how does it feel to know you're dying? It's an impertinent question. If you have any grasp, if you've got any notion of what I mean by feeling, That's not a question. It is not a valid question. The question does not exist. How do you feel about dying? You don't feel about dying. But the thing is, you don't feel about anything that the mind can talk about. That is an exclusive area of thought. And the guy simply pointed out, that's not what you're asking. What you're asking, of course, the person that asked couldn't see it, but what he was also saying was, there is no such question. Verbally valid is not, how do I feel about dying? You should say, what do I think about the fact that I'm dying? But see, there it is. There is where men mistake emotion by what I mean by feel. Because they go, that's not true. A person would say, you would certainly feel something about the fact that you're dying if you knew it. My God, you would feel something. That's not true. It's not possible, is the point. You could have emotions about it without any doubt, but you can't have emotions about anything without thought. You can't feel, not just about dying. I just tried to pick a glaring example, I thought, to highlight it. But you don't feel about any of the things that humans say that they think about or that they claim to feel about. That was the gist of the item that said that another way to look at the distinction between what I mean by feeling, which I know I'm not describing it much, but it's consciously so on my part. But what I mean by feeling and what people, ordinary minds, mean when they say emotion. If you picked everything that you dislike, and dying would fall into what people dislike, I'm sure, but if you picked all the things you dislike, well, that's not really true the way I present it to you. I said if you picked all the non-physical things, but it still worked. If you picked all the things you dislike about life and yourself, you can make them as wide range as you want. The injustice of life, how about that? That'd be what you dislike about life. And then what you dislike non-physically about you. And the size of your ears and the length of your nose for you men. Any complaints you had about you, like, I'm too shy. I'm tone deaf. I don't have any artistic ability. Whatever it is. If you take all of the complaints, the criticisms you have of life itself, as wide range as you want to make them, such as the injustice of existence, down to as personal and as individual as any complaints you have about you, non-physical, that I'm too shy, I'm too fearful, I'm too bashful, I'm too aggressive. And we make two columns. One of them is feeling and one of them is thought. Every single complaint that you and all men have, if they could see it, fall in the second column. You don't feel any complaint with life. You don't feel any complaint about yourself. You can't feel a need to awaken because you can't feel that you're asleep. If you turn your attention totally on feeling, you're not asleep. That's the trick. That's what I'm trying to point out to you. And you don't have to know what feeling is. That's why I liked it at the end. I changed it to that other place. Now, we know what the head is. We know what the mind is. We don't even have to talk about that. We don't have to discuss it all. You know what looking at thought is. You know what listening to your own head is. You know what being immersed in it, which is normally referred to as being asleep, being totally asleep, that you were, your consciousness, your that part of your brain that can be, as we call it, conscious, was totally involved, absolutely immersed in the pictures, the thoughts flowing through your mind automatically. And they are impersonal, although they all seem to be about you. You did not think them up. You did not produce this movie, but it seems to be about you, and who else would do it? Who else gives a damn? Who would make a movie of you? And you think, well, me. No, that is the egotism of the mind. It didn't make the movie, but there the mother is. Being asleep, being captivated. Being fuzzy-headed, being hypnotized is, as you all know, when what we call consciousness, which is a real phenomenon, is totally involved with watching those pictures, listening to those pictures. That is the mind. Now, discount that, and everything else is what I mean by feeling. So it's simple. We know that there's the mind, and then there's this other place. And you don't remember, like my story of the speaker in that crowd? Somebody hollers, "Well, I'm not sure what you mean by feeling." You don't have to know. "Well, I'm not sure I understand exactly what you mean by feeling, by looking at feeling, turning your attention to feeling rather than thought." All right, listen to me, you audience, if I was in the story. You know what it is to listen to your thought. Yes, I do. So you know what the mind is. Yes, we do. Then look to the other place. And then you can say, "Well, I'm not sure what you mean." You don't have to be sure what I mean. Just do it. And if you do it, there it is. Some of you liked that news item, but I was afraid it was just on the basis that it kind of caught you by surprise, that you can look, according to my diagrams in the past, you can look, quote, up toward thought, or you can look, quote, down toward feeling. But it doesn't matter, because no matter where you look, there it is. And then I'm just waiting for somebody in that fictional crowd to go, "There, what is? I don't know what you mean." You don't have to know what I mean. There it is. What? All right, I'll give you a choice then. Nothing and everything. But if you turn away from thought, just turn away. Don't argue with it. Don't criticize it. Don't say damn. It really requires no effort. When I say turn your attention away from it, you become aware that your attention is totally on thought. If you become aware of it, you've turned away from it. But then, I suspect, there's still that feeling like, "Well, what do I do now?" Did anybody hear the answer? That was it. You're momentarily freed, right? Yes. Well, yes, but now what? Do I have to repeat it again?
That concludes this talk. Be sure to visit us at jancox.com, where you can search through 3,000 talks for topics of interest, or just leave us a message.